So here we are at the beginning of our Lent living upside down journey. A mere 4 days from having the ashes of our human failings and failures and frailty smeared on our forehead to remind us of how desperate we are for God. How desperately we need His forgiveness in our hearts and especially in the relationships that we have with one another. And so how we're going to take this journey of Lent is that we're going to focus our attention on the suffering and death of Jesus that kind of demonstrates for us this whole idea of how desperate we are for forgiveness. And we're going to do it in this journey by looking at 5 different parables from the Gospel of Matthew that have to do with the values and the way the kingdom of God is, or can be, the values of the kingdom that Jesus teaches, which conflict and kind of take our values of doing life, our way of doing life, and simply turn them upside down. And of course, we decided that perhaps we should start with the easiest one of all, and that is forgiving one another, right? Easy peasy, you know, kind of this forgiveness business. And so we thought that also that we might take some advice from, and I just want to warn you, it's tongue-in-cheek advice, okay? From the shallow Christian. Let's watch. Okay, well, I've never thought of the whole idea of don't forgive anybody because you're saving them from sinning. It's a novel way of approaching forgiveness. But let's just take that idea and turn it upside down, okay? And could you open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 18 as we again go back to this story of God's forgiveness? Now, as you look at verse 21, don't you just love Peter? I mean, golly, he is always the one willing to ask the uncomfortable, embarrassing questions that we don't want to ask out loud. And so he comes to Jesus in verse 21, and what does he say? Lord, if another member of the church sins against me or hurts me, how often should I forgive? As many as 7 times? From Peter's perspective, that's a big-hearted amount of forgiveness. And from ours, too, because, you know, boy, it would be hard to forgive somebody who has done something to you 7 times and for you to forgive them. But we can almost imagine the shock on Peter's face as he hears Jesus respond to him with not 70 times, but 70 times 7. I love this cartoon I found where there's this, Jesus is giving this 70 times 7, and there's a disciple in the back thinking, oh, great, not only do I have to forgive my brother, but now I got to do math. They laugh more at the other services. Well, Jesus explains his answer, of course, by telling this wonderful but puzzling parable about the king who decides he's going to settle some debts from those who owe him the most. And you really don't grab the significance of the what's going on until you realize just how much a talent was and how large the debt was. Well, a talent was 130 pounds of silver, which was equivalent to 15 years of a man's wage, which meant that this guy owed 150,000 years of wages. Whoa, that's an awful lot. And we could just say a gazillion dollars, okay? That's how much he owed. And there's no way, even in a million years, this guy's going to be able to pay him back, especially if it's in jail. So what makes this such an extravagant gift, this king's forgiveness, is that the king, according to Jesus, is moved out of pity. And the word there, it's an interesting word because we've seen it before. I remember Pastor Steve having us to say it out loud. And it's a Greek word, and it's splanknesomai, okay? Splanknesomai. I'm going to give you some splanknesomai. Let's say that together. I just want to hear it, okay? Splanknesomai, okay. And what it means is your bowels are loose. Now, not the way you're going there, folks, but the whole idea is that your heart and your deep feelings and your emotion of love are in this area, and you know, you just, oh, you know, this kind of cringe. What it's all about is compassion. Compassion. And you see, that's what happens. The king moves from this legal part of you owe me to a relational part where he started to see the man and live in his shoes when he began to consider him as a husband who was worried about his wife and his kids and being thrown into jail and what that would mean and the agony. And so he was moved in his pity. And compassion was possible. Now, in contrast to this king's extreme generosity, the liberated servant comes across to this guy owing him 10 denarii. And a denarii was worth about a day's wage, which meant that the second servant owed the forgiven servant about 100 days of labor. Now, that's a lot, right? But in comparison to that first amount, there's no comparison, right? And our question we're left with is, why couldn't that forgiven servant have overlooked what was a relatively small amount when he had just been forgiven an impossibly used one? And isn't that exactly the problem we all have with forgiveness? Peter's question and Jesus' parable reminds us of our human inclination to count, to keep track of, to have this imaginary ledger where we're always marking down and remembering the hurts that we have received from people. And the question is, are we like that unforgiving servant whose debt has been paid for and yet can't do anything but get out his calculator and start getting this guy who owes him that amount? And we find that this guy in the parable is not a whole lot different than Peter, who got the whole conversation going in the first place by asking Jesus for what? A number. How many times? Give me a number, Jesus. What's reasonable for one of your disciples? For you see, Peter wasn't dumb. He had watched Jesus, extend compassion and grace and mercy to lots of people, even those outside their Jewish circle. And he had heard Jesus talk a lot about forgiveness. And so maybe Peter was trying to impress Jesus with what he considers a more than sufficient amount of forgiveness, 7 times. And I love what, I follow this one blog. It's a former seminary professor over at Luther. His name is David Lowes. And he wrote on his blog in the meantime, suggesting that Jesus might have answered Peter, "So you want to play the numbers game? Well, I'll give you some numbers. 70 times 7. How about that?" And the point Lowes makes is that Jesus wasn't trying to increase the number of times to forgiveness. What he was trying to do was to stop Peter from counting in the first place. You see, what he was trying to say was that forgiveness is like love. It's inherently and intimately more relational than it is legal. And Lowe says, had Peter asked Jesus how many times he had to love, we might have realized his mistake. But when he said, "How many times must I forgive?" well, we kind of miss the significance there. And the point being this, we would never ask Jesus, we would never say, "Jesus, how many times do I need to love my kids? How many times do I need to love my wife? How many times do I need to love my neighbor?" How come we have the problem with forgiveness? Maybe Jesus is trying to get us to go deeper, to realize there's two dimensions to forgiveness, and both are important. There is, and I'm going to state this clearly, there are times when there is the legal side to forgiveness. Keeping track and holding one accountable. Because there are people that sometimes repeatedly and are unkind and hurtful and mean-spirited and violent. And we may very well have to put a distance between them. Jesus never suggested that we're supposed to be a punching bag for a bully or an abusive person. There it is. We're not supposed to go there. In reality, the most loving and forgiving thing to do, we may possibly have to very well stop putting up with the behavior. There's a legal side. But there's the other side, the harder side, the deeper side of relationships. The realization that God has given us, he's made us, he's wired us for relationships. We thrive in relationships, and yet we're all sinners, and our relationships shatter, and they break, and they fail. And the question then is, how then do we see ourselves and the others as valued people, worth dignity and love in the same way God sees me? And then how are the relationships to be repaired and mended? And that's where compassion, don't you see? Compassion that grows out of relationships make it all possible. The parable where the king is moved by pity suggests that our hearts too can be moved to compassion when we refuse to live by an us and them mentality. Those people, she's that, he's bad. When we refuse to reduce people to objects and to categories and begin to see people as people, loved, cared for, the same Jesus who died for me died for them. And when we begin to understand that they have the same hurts and the brokenness and the doubts and the problems that I have, then we can begin to see how God's forgiveness, that same abundant grace and mercy that we have received, can possibly be shared with that person who's hurt us so badly. But it starts when we realize that they're deserving to be valued as people, as children of God. I had to learn this during a very difficult moment in my life. I was in my last year in seminary, and I had decided to take a small groups course by taught by this kind of eccentric, maybe weird would be a better word, Dr. Elhart, okay? And at the beginning of the course, we had to introduce ourselves and tell our stories to each other. So, you know, I was after some of them had gone, I started to give my story. And for some strange reason, I mentioned my grandfather. And when I did, my voice caught. And then I went on and I finished up. And I wasn't surprised that Dr. Elhart then circled around and said, "Mark, could you share more about your grandfather?" That was really hard. Because I had been carrying around a lot of hurt and pain and rejection when my grandfather kicked us out of our family. Because we had done the unthinkable. We had left the conservative Lutheran church that I grew up in and joined a kind of non-denominational Baptist church. And you see, my grandfather, there he is. My grandfather was a rather strong-headed, stubborn German who kind of believed that heaven kind of was reserved for Lutherans. Okay? And all the rest of them, well, they kind of managed to get in, but only by the skin of their teeth. Okay? So the fact that we had left, you know, that was big. And my grandfather ruled our family with an iron fist, and you just never bucked the system. Only my father did. And my grandfather's reaction was immediate. When my father was in his house, he kicked him out. We were not invited to any family functions. My grandfather would not allow any of the rest of the family to mention our names out loud in his presence. And it went on for quite a while. I can remember some of my birthdays, they weren't so good. And I remember my grandmother would drive up and park and kind of hand me my gift. At least I got a gift. A gift through the window. Sometimes she'd get out, but she made sure she never got on the driveway because that wasn't allowed. Well, the worst moment came was when I went to a band concert, and during the intermission, it was at a high school, and so we were out in the lobby, and I saw my grandfather on the other side of the lobby. Now, I hadn't seen him for a really long time. And you know how, you know, eyes connect. You know, he saw me, I saw him, and we looked at each other. And my reaction was, I'm going to go. And so I started like this, and my mother was standing behind me, and she put her hands down on my shoulders and wouldn't let me go as I saw him look one more time at me, and then he simply turned around and walked away. And I cannot tell you the hurt and the pain I felt at that moment, thinking, what did I do to hurt you? I never did anything wrong. And you walk away from me? And I was amazed that at this unopportune moment, in front of all my seminarians, that this bubbled to the surface. And so the professor said to me, "Would you like to talk to your grandfather?" And I can remember, he's not going to suggest a seance, is he? You know? And so he said, "No." He said, "I would like to become your grandfather, and you can tell him what's on your heart." I thought, well, this is really weird, but I'll give it a shot. And so I started to talk to Dr. Elhart as if he was my grandfather. And at first it was really hard, but then all of a sudden, it was like a dam broke. I mean, all this heart, all hurt and stuff came. And I'm screaming at my professor going, why did you leave me? Why did you walk away? How could you hurt me this much? How can you hurt my father? I went on and on until finally I was exhausted and I just stopped. As you can imagine, there was just silence in the room. Until finally my professor, Dr. Elhart, said, Mark, I've always loved you. And I have loved your dad. And I simply tried the best I could. I know it wasn't enough. And I know I hurt you. But I love you, and I tried my best. And something happened inside me at that moment. My father stopped being the one who had hurt me and started to become the one who was just like me. Broken. Often doing dumb stuff. And kind of like just a normal human being who was trying to do the very best he could. And like many of us, as I've come to understand, as we try to parent and try to do the best we can, we often find ourselves doing our best, but sometimes it isn't enough. And that's why this parable is so incredibly important to us. So incredibly important, because it reminds us in this outrageous forgiveness that it turns upside down our world's constant tit for tat, keeping track, revenge, and conditional forgiveness. Because when all is said and done, Jesus would challenge us to consider the whole topic of forgiveness in light of the gift that he has given to us, the extravagant grace that he's given to all of us. And it begins when we start to see each other as beloved children of God. Broken, often failing, yet trying the best we can and trusting God to do the rest. And so we're going to end this sermon a little differently. To consider who we know and who we have in our lives, who we might need to forgive some more. To extend the same kind of grace that we have received to him or to her. And in the quietness of this moment, simply let that face bubble up inside you. And listen to Jesus whisper his words of grace.